If you're a facilities manager at a warehouse and your HVAC system goes down, it can turn up the heat, literally. But don't sweat it. Grainger has you covered. Grainger offers over a million industrial-grade products for all your operations, including warehouse HVAC maintenance. And even better, they offer access to experts and fast delivery, so you and your warehouse can both keep your cool. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
What's going on, everybody? Thank you so much for joining me here on episode 46 of the 90 Feet From Home Fantasy Baseball Podcast. We are presented by Underdog Fantasy, and I'm your host, Joe Orico. You guys can check me out over on Twitter, at JoeOrico99. That's where I post all of my newest work, these shows, any articles that I write, updates on my Patreon. You guys can keep up to date with all of that by throwing a follow at JoeOrico99. Like I mentioned, we are brought to you by Underdog Fantasy. There's an amazing special going on for the Home Run Derby. You guys are really missing out if you are not signing up today. Gunnar Henderson's line was set at 23.5 homers for the Derby. The special at Underdog, you can get that line at 0.5. So the play would cash if Gunnar Henderson hits a single home run in the Derby. You guys can check out the link in the description of the episode. Use my code Joe99. You'll get that pick. You'll get an additional special pick. And you'll also get a deposit bonus of up to $250 in cash if it is your first deposit. So if you're not signed up yet for Underdog, what the hell are you waiting for? Go ahead, check out that link in the description and start having some fun. Home Run Derby, one of the more fun events of the season, and you can make it just that much more exciting for yourself by checking out Underdog. But today, we are going to be breaking down Wednesday's slate, talking about the big things that stood out, and then later on, of course, we're going to be talking about the waiver wire. If you guys missed it, I hosted the Fantasy Pros Baseball Podcast today with Joe Pizzapia. Another half an hour of me rambling about baseball. We talked about the Dodgers rotation. We talked about a potential Mets and Astros swap, Tobias Myers. We got into a lot of topics. So if you guys did miss that, it's on the Fantasy Pros MLB YouTube channel and also wherever you get your podcast. It should be in your feeds as you're listening to this as well. So if you're not sticking me, there's another half hour of me talking today. And if you missed it, live again tomorrow at 12:30 p.m. Eastern, myself and Joey P. will be doing it all again tomorrow. But let's start breaking down the Wednesday slate, and let's start with Michael King. He was the most recent pitcher to victimize the Seattle Mariners. It seems like everybody who goes up against them, it's like the easiest over if you're betting strikeouts for the day. Oh, this guy's facing the Mariners, take the over. If you've been doing that the last few weeks, you're probably looking at vacation properties down south somewhere. Michael King had 9 strikeouts, allowed 3 hits and 1 earned run, just 1 walk with a 32% CSW, 14.3% swinging strike rate. There have certainly been some ups and downs. It has not been an uneventful season for Michael King. There have been some really great starts. There have also been some absolute stinkers, and it's been a bit better as of late in terms of the consistency. But earlier on in the season, like there was that famous one where he had a 7 shutout innings with 11 strikeouts against the Dodgers, followed that up with a 6 earned run performance against the Rockies away from Coors. So it was very hard for a while to figure out when you're starting him. It was pretty inconsistent there for a while, but if you're looking back over the last month plus, there's only one start since May 15th where Michael King has allowed more than 2 earned runs in an outing, and that came against Milwaukee a few weeks ago. But the strikeouts have been there. The command generally has been better as well. Earlier in the year, we saw a ton of 2-3 strikeout games, walk games. He even walked 7 against the Giants there at the end of March. 4 innings with 7 walks. There was a few 3 walk games. But if you're looking recently, it's 1 or 2 as opposed to 2 or 3, which it's still not great. Like the walks are still kind of a problem there at 9%, but certainly on the right path there, especially when you're talking about such a high strikeout rate. It doesn't bother me so much if he's walking 9% of batters, if he's striking out close to 30% of batters. So that's all good. 3.41 ERA, 1.23 whip, and 129 strikeouts in 111 innings. That is a pretty massive strikeout total. My main concern with Michael King is the same as it's been for a while, and it's the innings and it's the workload that we're going to expect from him in the second half. He's been a reliever for his entire major league career. He was a starter in the minors, and if you go back and look, he's actually thrown as many as 149 innings in a season. The problem is that that was 2017 at low A for the Marlins. The year after that, it was 122 innings. And since then, he has been a reliever, pretty much exclusively with the odd start here and there. Before last season, there was a few starts at the big league level, but generally speaking, Michael King had been a seventh, eighth inning guy for his major league career. Converted to a starter past the midway point last season and looked great. And he's looked really, really good so far this year. But my question is, how far can we push it here with Michael King? He's at 111 innings. He threw 104 last season. And like we talked about, he hasn't really gotten up much farther over this total in like 6 years. So I do have some concerns about, A, what the arm is going to do when you put more strain on it. And also, it's a different type of strain as a starter versus a reliever. 1 and 2 inning outings now turn into 6 and 7 inning outings. It changes your entire process. I used to be a pitcher, nowhere near this level, of course, but it definitely does change your mindset and the way that your arm is going to feel, even just on a mental basis, if you're starting a game versus relieving a game. There's a lot of changes for Michael King over the last year or so, and he's handled them fairly well, but I do wonder, as we get into close to uncharted territory for innings, is Michael King still going to look the same? Are we still going to get those great strikeouts? Is the command still going to be good as he goes on and gets to maybe 150 innings or so? I really do worry. We've got 45% of the season left. He's projected, if you look at the various systems on Fangraphs, to throw another 70 to 80 innings. I'd be pretty surprised if Michael King is throwing 180, 190 innings total this season. I think that would be kind of risky for the Padres to jump him up close to 100 innings. I think the Padres are probably going to make the postseason. They're currently in that last wild card spot. The NL wild card is really impossible to figure out. You got the Nats, who are like the seventh team out of playoff spot right now, who are only 5.5 games back. Most of the teams are 1.5, 2.5, 3.5 games back. So it's hard to say, really. The Padres are not locked into a spot, but it does feel like they're probably going to end up in the postseason. I think it really depends on their record, what we see to some extent with Michael King. I would expect him to be kind of cautious one way or the other. If the Padres are locked into a playoff spot come the last few weeks of the season, there's a good chance Michael King is told to take a break, take a breather. They throw him on the IL, the quote-unquote IL, and they give him a bit of a break because they're going to want those bullets more so in October than I think they will in September, especially if the team is looking primed for a playoff spot. If the team is struggling and if there's still a battle going on the last few weeks, maybe they think they don't have much of a choice. But then the question becomes, can King's arm hold up? I think it's either one or the other. Either King's performance is going to falter a little bit down the stretch, or the Padres are going to limit him over the last few weeks of the season, which will make it kind of hard for head-to-head managers to trust him. It's really good, as a side note, if you play in head-to-head, if you're the commissioner, to end your league literally like 3 weeks early so you don't have to deal with any bullshit, with shutdowns, with ILs, with random guys getting called up and you're needing to start a dude from Double A to win your week and championship. Like, you don't want that. You really don't want that. It takes away from the fun of it, I think, to some extent. I mean, to each their own. If you enjoy that, you enjoy it. But I don't really like those last couple weeks in head-to-head for any sport. Fantasy basketball is another one. I don't play a lot of fantasy basketball anymore, but those last few weeks of the season, you don't even know half the players being sent out there because everybody's resting, everybody's taking a break for the postseason, whatever. So I think if you can end the season early as your commissioners, if you're looking ahead to next year, that's something that you should think about. But for right now with Michael King, you've built up a lot of goodwill with the strikeouts, with the solid ratios, pitching for a good team. He's got 7 wins, probably a decent haul you can get back. And I think there are probably quite a few safer second half assets where we don't really have to worry about the innings concerns or what a guy is going to look like once he reaches us. I mean, they're both innings concerns in different ways, but one of them is team related. One of them is health related. I think there are a few different avenues where this doesn't end particularly well for Michael King. There's a chance that it does, but I think the prudent move would be to at least kick the tires and see what somebody is willing to offer you for Michael King, because he's been very good, but I worry about what we're going to see down the stretch here. Let's talk about Shota Imanaga, who was excellent in a tough matchup against the Orioles. 6 shutout innings, he allowed 6 hits and 1 walk, struck out 6 batters, 26% CSW, and a 12% swinging strike rate. I've been damn impressed, and I think, honestly, what might happen here over the next couple of seasons based on the success that Senga had and the success that Imanaga's had is the potential to overvalue guys who come over in future seasons and think this is what we get when they come from Japan, sub-3 ERAs. And well, that's possible. I do worry about the impact of the last couple seasons in terms of our analysis. Are we going to start to push guys up artificially because of Imanaga and Senga without digging into them enough? Just because, well, they came from Japan, and the last couple of guys had some success, So that's something I do want to point out. Don't get too crazy about future imports just because of the success that these guys have had. But it's pretty hard to fault anything that Imanaga has done this season. We're talking about a guy who is over the 20% strikeout minus walk rate threshold. You guys know if you listen regularly how much I love that. If you're 20% strikeout minus walk rate guy, there's a very good chance that you are having success at the big league level. There's a couple things that I think you need to keep an eye on with Imanaga. Mostly, it's the home run problem that we have seen from him a little bit. It's not drastic at 1.11 homers per nine, but he's allowing a lot of hard contact, specifically the barrels. 9.2 barrel rate, and I do think that the home runs are probably not going to look so great for some games in the summer. You also have to look at the fact that he's a lot better away from home. He has a 2.51 ERA on the road, and at Wrigley, it's only 3.40. So I think in certain tough home matchups against a team that hits a lot of homers, it would be wise to at least consider sitting Imanaga. But that's kind of the only concern here. I think the home runs might be a bit of a problem, but he's got great command. Strikeout rate is solid. If you look at ERA estimators, they're also very good. The Sierra's at 3.58. The XFIP is at 3.75. XERA is at 3.53. He's not getting terribly lucky. The BABIP is 2.95. He's straining 77% of base runners.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
I think this is generally who he is. I think Imanaga is a low threes ERA guy. I don't know if he's a sub three ERA guy. We're kind of splitting hairs at that point, but so few pitchers actually end the season with a sub three ERA. I think it'll probably be in like the 3.1 to 3.3 type of range, and you're absolutely taking that from Imanaga, especially considering where you drafted him. It's been an absolutely fantastic season, but I do want to double down on that point from earlier. If there's, you know, and not talk about Roki Sasaki, because he is like a top, people talk about him like Jacob DeGrom. But for the next guy that comes over from Japan who's not like a generational talent, we might overvalue them just because of the success of the last couple seasons. So just a reminder to always dig in individually instead of just using a grouping of players. Like the thing with rookies this year, the rookies all stink this year. They're not good. You got to still evaluate on a case-by-case basis because there have been a few rookies that have been very good. I know they've disappointed as a whole, but just kind of a point on generalizing there a little bit. But let's move on and let's talk about Nick Pivetta. Second consecutive double-digit strikeout game for him, 6 2/3, 6 hits. He did allow 4 earned runs against Oakland, which I don't love, but 10 strikeouts to just 2 walks with a 33% CSW and a 15.2% swinging strike rate. Nick Pivetta has turned into one of the best strikeout pitchers in baseball over the last couple of seasons. He still isn't really getting the credit he deserves, though. I mean, the roster rates have finally caught up. There was a good while where he wasn't that rostered. He's up to 77% now. Today have we seen ads or drops of Pivetta today? Actually, more drops than ads, funny enough. And that kind of goes to my point that he's still kind of undervalued. Maybe it's because the ERA is still at this point above 4, and people will look at that and say, well, it's still Nick Pivetta, right? 4.18 ERA, okay, it's what we've always gotten from Nick Pivetta. And I think a lot of people will kind of look past the growth that we've seen from him this season. He's one of 18 starting pitchers with a 20% strikeout minus walk rate who have pitched in. I mean, you got to do searches for players who aren't like qualified. I said he was qualified and I misspoke in my tweet because he's technically not thrown enough innings to qualify. But of guys who have reached that 70 plus inning threshold, he's one of 18 guys with a 20% strikeout minus walk rate. And it's really helped that he's cut down on those walks that have always been not a huge, huge problem, but something that does, you know, stick out on the stat sheet a little bit over the years, that he's been not quite at 10%, but always just hovering below that 9.8, 9.3, 9.4, 8.5. The walks have always been a little bit of a problem, and now we're seeing him at 6.5 on the walk rate. Since about the middle of last season, Nick Pivetta is a totally different pitcher. I think that he is close to an ace. Maybe it's going a little too far to say that he is an ace, but he's pretty damn close to an ace in my eyes. I do worry a little bit about pitching at Fenway because it's not the greatest environment for pitchers. But even still, I think people are generally undervaluing Nick Pivetta and what he has done this season and even going back to last year. And I feel like if you're trying to acquire him, people are not going to be asking for what they probably should be because, well, it's Nick Pivetta, and he still has an above 4 ERA, and a lot of people won't look much farther than that. I was talking to a guy yesterday in my Patreon chat, and he was saying the guys in my league, when they're making trades, they strictly look at rankings. They look at where a player is ranked for the season and nothing more. And I feel like as I read that, I was like, holy shit. But that's actually the way a lot of people play fantasy. A lot of people will say, look, he's ranked 103 in my league. I'll trade him to that guy for a player who's ranked 106, and that's a fair deal. A lot of the time, that's a horrible, horrible way to do it. Look below the surface. You look at the strikeouts increasing. You look at the walks decreasing for Pivetta. He's a different pitcher than he was in previous seasons. And I know it's crazy to talk about him in this light because we've seen what he's done every year. Like, Pivetta's been around for a while without really making much of an impact. So it is definitely a huge change on what we're used to. But do not be fooled by the ERA. Nick Pivetta is pretty damn close to a stud. Let's talk about Kyle Freeland. I don't think we've talked at all about Kyle Freeland this season because, well, there's not really much of a need to talk about Rockies pitchers. This is a fantasy baseball podcast. Unless we're talking about guys to stream against, there's really no need to bring them up most of the time. But Kyle Freeland has thrown four consecutive quality starts and was great yesterday against the Reds. 6 2/3, 8 hits, 2 earned runs with 9 strikeouts and 1 walk. 33% CSW, 14% swinging strike rate. I don't really understand this. You could actually make a case for Freeland as a bottom five starting pitcher in baseball. This has come as a bit of a shocker that he's been doing this. There's nothing to buy into, though, and I've seen the roster rates start to slowly trick up with Kyle Freeland. It's not a lot, but he's up to 7% on Yahoo, where he was only 1% or 2% last week. I think you're playing with fire if you're buying into him. I really do, and we don't need to spend a lot of time on this. I think most people are aware. But we're talking about an 8.9% strikeout minus walk rate. His ERA is 6, and the estimators, while they are better, they're still like mid to high fours, 466 Sierra, 442 XFIP, 475 expected ERA. This is not a guy where there's really anything to it. So, again, people are going to look at rankings. People look at the last couple of weeks. Well, Kyle Freeland is closing in on a top 100 player for the last couple of weeks. And for the last month as well, if you look at, like, just on Yahoo's app in the last month, Kyle Freeland, 171 ERA, 106 whip, 21 strikeouts and 26 innings. Some people will see that and want to take a chance on him. I think you guys are smarter than that. Kyle Freeland is nobody that you need to be worrying about from a fantasy point of view. Even if you're talking 15 teams, NL only, like, there's just no real room for Kyle Freeland anywhere. We've spent more than enough time on him. Let's move on. Let's talk about Christopher Morel. He's made some really incredible strides this season, and I've turned from a Christopher Morel hater to somebody who traded for him last week in Tout Wars, or maybe it was 2 weeks ago now, with my good friend Carlos Marcano from Baseball Prospectus. We made a trade. It is a saves plus holds league, and it also counts innings pitched instead of wins. It's on-base percentage instead of batting average. I traded him Juan Duran straight up for Christopher Morel. Now, saves plus holds, initially you hear that, you're thinking, holy shit, he traded Duran for Morel. It's saves plus holds. I also have Griffin Jacks in that league, so it's not like, oh my God, you lost out on a top closer. And Duran actually hasn't been quite usual Duran this season. The strikeouts haven't been there. But Christopher Morel, I think, is one of the more undervalued players in fantasy still. What he's done this season is, I don't want to say Acuna-esque, but the drop in strikeout rate by 7%. Now, he's been striking out a little bit more recently. This was more drastic if you looked a few weeks ago. But cutting your strikeout rate by 7%, increasing the walk rate by 3%, while maintaining your power is pretty impressive. The barrel rate's down a little bit, but it was at 15.5, and that's a pretty unsustainable number unless you are like a Nolan Gorman or you are like a Matt Wallner or an Aaron Judge. Like that's a crazy high barrel rate at 15%. He's still at 11.5 barrel rate, 45% hard hit. He's a power hitter who can steal bases, who's making strides in terms of his plate discipline, and there's a lot to really like, especially when you look at the expected stats. Batting average is 200. That stinks, but expected batting average is 250. His slugging is 375. Again, stinks. Expected slug is 465. The WOBA is 300. Expected WOBA is 356. I think you guys are getting my point here. He has been underperforming. He has a 220 BABIP for the season, where the last couple of years, his first couple cups of coffee, which are not even cups of coffee, they're 100-plus game sample sizes in each year. It was a 320 BABIP and a 303 BABIP. Now, putting the ball in play more, you figure that there's going to be a couple of more base hits coming here and there. cutting down on the strikeout rate, but I think it is a lot of bad luck, really, with that BABIP and with the expected stats. Considering the rest of the profile for Christian Morel, I think he's really good, and I think that we are in for a pretty solid second half. Even though the first half has been kind of frustrating, up and down, whatever, he's got 16 homers and 7 steals with 47 ribbies and 39 runs scored. We're talking about a guy who is multi-eligible for fantasy. He can play 3 positions in a lot of leagues. He's eligible at second, third, and in the outfield. And I think the recent slump will have him available for probably not a hell of a lot. The last month has been awful for Christopher Morel. You look at the numbers over the last 30 days, he's batting .194. He has hit 4 home runs in that time, but we've seen some drops. He's dropped to below 80% on Yahoo. Actually, he's at 80% exactly. But this is a guy who is up at the mid-80s. Even just in the last week, we have seen him drop 3%. So I think, generally speaking, whether he's a free agent or whether he's available on the trade block, people are not asking for a lot for Christopher Morel. I think you can probably get him for a decent deal, and I expect a pretty nice second half from him as well. Let's talk about Noel V. Marte. Really nice day yesterday. He was 3-for-4, scored a couple runs. It's been kind of slow since his reinstatement. It has not been full steam ahead. He started off looking pretty good over those first few games, stole a base. He actually stole a couple bases, hit a home run against the Yankees. And then he went on this brutal 0-for streak. But yesterday he went 3-for-4, scored a couple runs. I think that Noel V. Marte is still somebody that you can trust and still somebody that is very, very much a solid fantasy asset. Now, he's dropped 10% from 43 to 33 on Yahoo. I'd take a chance on the upside if you do see him out there. He's playing every day in a great park at a premium fantasy position. I have talked a lot about what potential impact the PEDs might have had, but I ultimately don't put his success onto it. I think that more likely than not, he's a kid who was very talented, who made a stupid mistake to take steroids, and it'll probably taint him forever, the same way we'll probably see it with Fernando Tatis and countless others, right? There are a lot of people who are not in the Hall of Fame when they probably should be because of PEDs. I don't know if we can even go that far with Noel V. Marte, where he's still talking about a 22-year-old kid here. But you're always going to have that suspicion whenever he goes through a bit of a slump, especially right now, to say, well, there we go. No steroids in the system, and now he's batting .176. I think it's a little too soon to make those assertions. We're talking about a really talented prospect going back to the time he was 17 years old as a Mariners prospect. If he was juicing at 17, it would surprise me a little bit. He's been successful all throughout the minor leagues. So that is in the back of our heads. It has been since we heard about it in the preseason. But at the same time, I think giving up on him because of 13 slow games is a pretty, pretty bad mistake to make, especially now that we are in the midst of summer. It is hot. He is playing in a great home run environment. Third base really does stink from a fantasy point of view. So I think Noel V. Marte is still somebody to hold on to, and if you are seeing him dropped, it would be wise to pick him up in your league. Let's talk about Nolan Jones. I've had enough. I think it's, at this point, the only reason he's still rostered anywhere is because of the sunk cost of people paying that exorbitant price they paid in draft season, and now they don't want to admit that the pick busted out on them and he's not doing what they were hoping for. That's why he's still on 63% of rosters. He's batting .199. He's hit 3 homers. He's stolen 3 bases. There's nothing encouraging in the data. He's striking out more. He's not stealing like he was last year, which was kind of an anomaly that he stole 20 bases, took advantage of the rules, and got to 20 bags in 106 games. And we started hearing people talk about 30-30, 35-35 potential from him. He's only attempted 5 bases all season. He's only been successful 3 times. He's striking out more. His barrel rate has dropped 10% from 15.7 all the way down to 5. Now, his hard hit rate has bounced around over the last couple of seasons. It's actually a pretty solid 47.5%. But I just don't think there's any need to hang on at this point. We've seen enough of a sample size to know that Nolan Jones is not, at least in shallow formats, he's not a viable fantasy option. If you're talking 15-teamers, really deep 12-teamers where 5 outfielders are started, NL only, those are different stories. If you're talking standard leagues, 10 and 12-teamers, 3 outfielders are rostered, you play on ESPN or Yahoo, he's still rostered in way too many leagues because people just think, well, he was my 4th-round pick, eventually it's going to pan out for you. It's time to just cut your losses, get rid of him. He has been stinking up the joint for far too long at this point to think that there's really any big turnaround coming, especially when the data is not so appealing. 33% strikeout rate. I know he plays for the Rockies, but that team around him really sucks. That's half the games where you're really not interested in starting him at all, and then at home it's kind of whatever. It's not like he's been super, super great at home this year either. He's batting .222 with one home run in 90 at-bats at home. Again, we're not talking about massive sample sizes, but it's enough at this point where you can be like, okay, Nolan Jones, maybe he has some decent stretches, and it's possible that he does get hot for a while and ends up with like 7-8 home runs, maybe he gets a 10 steals, whatever. But this is not a guy who needs to be rostered in shallow formats, and he is still rostered in a lot of them. 63% is a huge number. You remember how long it took us to get Taj Bradley up to that 63% mark? The guy had to throw like double-digit strikeout games, three starts in a row, shutout ball against good teams, and then people were like, okay, maybe I'll take a chance on him. And he's barely up to that number now. Nolan Jones has no business being on 63% of rosters. I think he's a very easy cut for me unless we're talking about super, super deep leagues. I want to talk about Sal Frelick as well because I don't think that he has really gotten his flowers this season. He's not a power guy. Like, when you hear the power stats, you guys are going to laugh. And like, why is he even bringing him up? But 269 batting average, 345 on base, 41 runs. Yes, two home runs on the season, but 19 ribbies and 12 stolen bases as well. He's been a really nice source of batting average, runs, and stolen bases that I don't think many people have really cared about so much. Now, he's not a guy that I think cuts it in standard, like we've mentioned, 10 and 12 team leagues with three outfielders. Don't think he really cuts it, but if you're talking anything that skews a bit deeper, anything that uses OBP instead of batting average, because we're talking about a guy who does walk consistently 10-plus percent of the time every single year, I think there's a good bit of value there. It's definitely more for the deeper league players, but he has been really, really excellent, and I wanted to shout him out because I don't think that he is getting enough love for what he does on both sides of the ball. Real life, fantasy, I think Sal Frelick is generally pretty overrated in the fantasy community, but even in real life, I don't think that maybe Brewers fans don't underrate him, but across baseball, he just doesn't seem like somebody that gets a lot of love. Let's talk about the popular pickups and drops of the day. Angel Martinez, it might be Angel. Angel Martinez for the Guardians. This guy has come up and done amazing things. Immediately inserted into the second spot in the batting order, which how often do you see a guy come up and be inserted into the top third, anywhere in the top third, really, of a lineup that has been a top 10 lineup in baseball this season? That's an incredibly fortunate piece of, I mean, it's not just luck. He has earned it with the on-base skills that he's shown in the minors, but it's an incredibly fortunate position for anybody to be in. Called up and then put between Stephen Kwan and Jose Ramirez. That's pretty damn good stuff. The walk rates are excellent all across the minors. He's not somebody who struck out a lot at all. We're talking about somewhere in the 17 to 23% strikeout range. That's totally fine. What we've seen at the big league level from him so far is 8 walks, which is 2 strikeouts in 9 games. He's hit the home run. He's scored 5 times and driven in 3 runs himself. I think there is some interest here, especially when you factor in he's eligible at second, third, short, and in the outfield. At this point, take a chance on Angel Martinez. Again, apologies if I'm pronouncing the first name wrong there. There is a chance that this is a really, really nice asset down the stretch. Is it going to stick for sure? I'm not 100% sure, but if he stays in that 2 spot in the order, which has been a bit of a revolving door for them, then there's a good chance that he is one of the better fantasy pickups for the second half. He's got decent power, decent speed. He's shown the ability to hit for solid batting averages. I don't think he's a 300 hitter or anything like that, but he can hit for like a 240 to 250 type of average, give you maybe like 7 homers, 8 homers to go along with a handful of steals as well in the second half. There could be something here for sure. I think if he is sitting out there on your waiver wire, you need somebody who can sit on your bench or somebody that you can just use when there's a guy has an off day or even as a starting piece right now while he's doing what he's doing. There are a lot of reasons to really like what Martinez is doing in Cleveland. He is up to 11% rostered on Yahoo. We've seen more than 4,000 ads today. All the ads have come in the last week or so. But I would be getting him while you can. I think that things are really, really positive for him out there in Cleveland. Landon Knack is a popular pitching ad for tonight. He goes up against Philly. Talked about him on Fantasy Pros earlier today. His strikeout line is kind of low for tonight. It's set at 4.5. He has been striking guys out pretty regularly. And again, I don't talk about betting on this show a lot, but the Dodgers are plus money on the money line tonight against the Phillies. It seems a bit odd, even with Aaron Nola on the mound on the other side. I think there's some value there in the Dodgers. But Landon Knack has a 286 ERA, 0.98 whip to this point in the season. The strikeouts have been solid. I think that he is somebody that you should be picking up, not just as a streamer, because Philadelphia is a little bit tricky. And, you know, I think it'll go well. I think the money line's a good play, but I also think that Philly can be a very tricky team to face. That being said, I think he is a rest of season type of play. Again, we talked about it earlier today, myself and Joe Pisapia, but the Dodgers rotation, like James Paxton is currently listed as the ace on roster resource on Fangraphs. They need some help with their pitching. And I think Landon Knack has provided that. And I think they're not going to be in a big hurry to get him out of this rotation in the second half. They will need him. And I think if you're getting a starting pitcher who's doing well for the Dodgers, I think that's a pretty solid pickup wherever you're talking here. Yariel Rodriguez is also a really popular ad. This one is ahead of tomorrow's start against Arizona. People are getting out ahead of it a day in advance. He's been pretty solid, but I don't know. Arizona has been a pretty tough matchup this year. Yariel Rodriguez has been pretty damn inconsistent himself as well, and the walks are still a big problem. Strikeouts are okay, but, I mean, not anything to write home about, really. Maybe you get 4 or 5 strikeouts from him if he's able to go 5 innings tomorrow. But I think, honestly, this is a play where you pick him up if you need help, if you're a little bit desperate in your head-to-head situation and you think, okay, I need to volume my way to victory or try to. That's where I pick up Yariel Rodriguez. If we're talking about a roto league, if you're talking anything season long, as opposed to just you're looking at the short term for a head-to-head play, that's where it would be a little bit trickier for me to invest in Yariel Rodriguez. I don't think there's a hell of a lot here that we need to worry about. Tyler Anderson is among the popular ads as he will face Seattle tomorrow. He's at 58% on Yahoo. He has jumped up a little bit over the last week. We're playing with fire here. He is due. He is super due to come back down to earth. Now, Seattle has been probably the easiest pitching matchup in all of baseball this season, but Tyler Anderson has just been so lucky. Like, he has a 505 xFIP. His Sierra is 515. He has a 6.6 strikeout minus walk rate. He has a 229 BABIP, 83% left on base. And his homer to fly ball is a lot lower than usual. It's the magical combination of luck for Tyler Anderson. And it really tells me that going forward, there's not a lot of hope for him. Now, Seattle is an interesting enough matchup with his recent success where you'd say, okay, maybe I do it. But again, he's somebody I'd put more into the if you're desperate column as opposed to, yeah, I'm going to pick him up. I'm going to pick him up everywhere because Tyler Anderson is somebody that I trust, like that you can't be trusting him. If anything, you use him for that Mariners start, hope you get lucky. And then after the All-Star break, you do, during the All-Star break, you do whatever you can to trade him. Truly, you do whatever you can to get Tyler Anderson off your roster because things are going to get terrible. But right now, you've built up enough goodwill with him as a close to top 100 player. Going to the All-Star game, I think you can probably capitalize on that in a pretty nice way for yourself as well. One more ad, Max Schumann. Man, I'm so bad with pronouncing names. And when I listen to games, I usually listen on mute. It's why I just realized yesterday Edmundo Sosa's walk-up music is Love Sosa by Chief Keef, which is kind of cool. I didn't know that growing up in that era. I wasn't a huge rap guy, but I thought it was kind of cool to hear that. But yeah, I don't listen to broadcasts usually. I keep them on mute. I can't stand a lot of local broadcasters, honestly. National, local, a lot of them I really can't stand. So Max Schumann, I believe is how it is pronounced. Forgive me again for butchering that one if I am. He's been pretty solid as of late. And actually, that's probably selling him short a little bit over the last 2 weeks. He's a top 50 player. He's got second, short, and outfield eligibility. This just feels like something that's really, really for deeper leagues. We're talking about a guy who's batting ninth for the Athletics. Things need to go very, very well for him to have much fantasy value. He's been stealing some bases lately. I know he's hit a couple of home runs, but this is not a guy who I don't think has a lot of power. 7.5 barrel rate throughout the minors. He's been okay, I guess. But this is a guy who's making his major league debut at age 27 this year. He's been serviceable, but I think he's really a deeper league play. If you are trusting Max Schumann in shallow formats, I think that's where you're really making a mistake. And he's starting a series up against Philly as we enter into the All-Star break where the pitching is not exactly easy to go up against, so I don't know that I would be investing in the guy who's batting nine for the Athletics. I just don't think that there's really much there outside of deeper formats at this point. Let's talk about the drops. Michael Lorenzen, he is a big-time drop today. We're seeing close to 4,000 of them already. Five runs and five hits with four walks over five innings. He did strike out three Angels last night. This is what we've talked about. You know, he's been pretty good this season, but you can't trust him. You can't trust a guy like him, like a Jose Quintana, like a Frankie Montas. There's so many guys that were, and Montas probably doesn't even qualify for that conversation, but guys who had been fairly solid, super outperforming their advanced metrics. Colin Ray is another one. These are not guys that you can really trust, and I think Michael Lorenzen is right in that group. Not somebody that I think is that interesting. Andre Pallante for the Cardinals, he's also among the popular drops. He allowed four runs on six hits with no walks while striking out five batters. Did make it 6 1/3 yesterday against Kansas City, but again, we're not talking about a guy with big strikeout upside. He's been pretty brutal for your ratios. The team context is okay. You might get the odd win here and there, but Pallante is not somebody that you can really trust. He's had a couple of decent starts as of late against Cincinnati and Pittsburgh, but I just think that at best he is a 15-team play, NL-only type of guy. If you're starting him in 10- and 12-team mixers, I think it is a bit of a mistake. Frankie Montas, he is among the drops, and again, I don't think there's a lot here. Pitching in Cincinnati, it's so hard to have value as a pitcher in Cincinnati. Look at the struggles that Hunter Green went through for his first few years. Remember, Luis Castillo was getting the shit kicked out of him for a while in Cincinnati. It's very hard, even as an elite pitcher, to function there. Frankie Montas is not an elite pitcher, and we saw that yesterday against the Rockies. He did strike out seven, but five runs and eight hits with two walks against Colorado. Away from Coors is not going to cut it. Of course, Great American Ballpark might as well be another Coors. But Montas is not somebody with the upside for strikeouts, for wins, for ratios that you need to be worrying about at all in shallow formats. Reed Garrett was placed on the IL yesterday with elbow inflammation. That is never good. He has not been very good for a while now, but he's still rostered in quite a few leagues. 25%. It was actually 32% over the last week, and with the news, specifically the last 24 hours, he's been dropped quite a bit. I don't think there's much here. If you're playing in saves plus holds leagues with unlimited IL, so essentially if you play in Tout Wars, that's kind of it. That's the only place where he might be worth a spot.
Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you sell everywhere, from their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system. Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, and sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. What I love about Shopify is how no matter how big you want to grow, Shopify gives you everything you need to take control and take your business to the next level. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/westwood1, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/westwood1 now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/westwood1.
But really, like, he banked a lot of early season fantastic production, 7 wins, 4 saves, massive strikeout numbers, and he's kind of been bad for a while the last month, 9 1/3 innings pitched. He does have a win and a save, but 4.82 ERA, 1.61 whip. Now with an elbow problem, even if you do have unlimited IL, I don't think there's a hell of a lot here for Reed Garrett. Davis Daniels sent back down to the minors yesterday, so he is a very easy drop. We had one good start and two absolutely horrific ones from him. He's a very easy drop. Drew Thorpe is an interesting one. He is actually among the popular drops today as well. He wasn't bad yesterday. 2 runs on 6 innings. He got the no decision against Minnesota, but those strikeouts not being there at all are a huge concern, and they are kind of where the conversation has to stop until he starts striking guys out, because we're talking about a 14% strikeout rate. You know, I make fun of Colin Ray and certain guys who can't get to 20. But even those guys are 15, 16, 17%. 14% for Drew Thorpe with an 11% walk rate. Pitching for the White Sox as well. Is there really a lot there? Now, he's going to get better than this. Those walks mostly did come in the Detroit and Arizona starts. Since then, it's been 1, 2, and 1 walks. But the combination of not the greatest command so far with no strikeout ability, pitching for a dreadful, dreadful team, where I'm not sure actually how many more innings they're going to fully let him throw. He's at 92 for the season. Last year he threw 139, so maybe we do just see them let him go, or see the White Sox just let him keep going. I don't know if they do. I don't know if the White Sox are going to be in any rush to keep anybody on the big league roster in the second half of the season. I think they're going to trade a bunch of players. Maybe that means they give more opportunity to Thorpe. But I also think there's a chance they just say, you know what, there's no point having him pitch much at all this season. That could be wrong. That could be wrong. As I'm saying it, I'm not 100% certain of it. But I just don't think there's much here, even if he is on the mound, unless we see drastic increases in strikeout rate, which, I mean, he was a very good pitcher in the minor leagues in terms of strikeouts. But if you look at the splits between his Yankee minor league career and what he's done as a White Sox, it tells two different stories. Like, the strikeouts essentially disappeared when he was traded to Chicago. If you're looking at what he did for the Yankees, 18 games at high A in 2023, he had a 32% strikeout rate. Five games when he was called up to double A, and it was even better at 40%. Then he gets traded to the White Sox this season at double A. We're talking about 25%, and now at the big leagues, 14%. Is that a White Sox thing? Is that just random happenstance? I don't know. It's hard to say it's not a White Sox thing when they've just been just such a terrible organization for a while. I don't know if they really hurt him in any way long-term in terms of getting strikeouts, but they certainly don't seem to have helped his development so far in the year or so that he's been there. Not a full year. It's only really been this year. But I don't think they've necessarily done him any favors. Just looking at what we have seen transpire so far, he's got a 158 BABIP. He's got a 66% left on base. Pretty strange numbers that haven't stabilized out yet. We're still talking about six starts. But generally speaking, long story short, I do agree that Drew Thorpe is somebody that can be dropped. I agree with the managers on Yahoo who are sending him back to the wire today. The team context alone is pretty damning, but when you're just literally going out there six innings with one strikeout, it's not always going to be that bad, but I don't think it's necessarily going to be that good over the next couple months where it's really worth it outside of deep, deep formats. And even then, I think it's kind of iffy, and you start him in good matchups, but would you start Drew Thorpe against the Braves or the Dodgers or the Padres or the Guardians or the Yankees or any of those teams? Probably not. You're really having to pick and choose when you're starting this guy as well. So I think there are a lot of roadblocks for fantasy value as far as Drew Thorpe is concerned in 2024. Future seasons, different story, but we're talking redraft here, and for redraft purposes, I just don't think that there is much there for the last couple months of 2024. But that will do it, guys. I will leave you there. Really, really enjoying doing this new podcast. I know it's essentially the same thing as the old show, but I am having a lot of fun being out on my own, quote unquote. I did a show for Fantasy Pros earlier today. I'm not technically on my own, but doing different things than we were doing before and quite a bit happier in the process as well. So I hope you guys are enjoying what we're doing over here. If you like the show, please do leave a rating and review. It really does help out the old algorithm. Get that show to be seen by more people. That really does help. Like I mentioned yesterday, should have said it off the top today to get people more excited, because who knows if you guys even listen to the show at this point. But Bat Flip Crazy Toby is going to be here tomorrow joining us, coming out of his little podcasting hiatus. We're going to be talking some strategy, more so than player debates. There might be one or two players we discuss, and we probably will get into a couple players. But more so, tomorrow's going to be a strategy show. We have been talking about a lot of player evaluations. Going to mix things up. First guest in a couple weeks, should be a lot of fun with Toby joining me over there. But that will do it, guys. That is enough out of me for today. Going to try and squeeze in the Waiver Wire show tomorrow before I record with Toby. I'm also hosting Leading Off tomorrow, so it'll be a busy day for me, but we'll do what we can. Worst case scenario, you get one podcast tomorrow. Potentially, we'll try for two. But in any event, you guys will hear me tomorrow afternoon one way or another. Until then, everybody, take care and have a great night.
Michelle Beadle. That's right, the Michelle Beadle. You're welcome. You love talking about sports. I love talking about sports. You know the only thing cooler than talking about sports? Sports! And right now, all your favorite sports are on SiriusXM. I'm talking every NFL game, every game from the NBA, NHL, MLB, every NASCAR race, golf major, major conference college sports, and all the top games in the WNBA. If it gets your heart pumping, it's on SiriusXM. So start your free trial of SiriusXM today. Visit SiriusXM.com/believe.